is Pull Yourself Together with E. Shaver Booksellers.
Hello, I'm Jessica, a lifelong lover of books, wide-ranging reader, fan of obscure British literature, all things Douglas Adams, long sentences, music biographies, the Oxford comma, always up for travel, except during COVID, and of course, Jane Austen.
And I'm Melissa, an eclectic bibliophile and all-around nerd who also loves Jane Austen, comics, and cooking. Together, we run an independent bookstore in Savannah, Georgia. Each episode, we discuss the books we've been reading and recommend.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, we're back.
Yes, and it's really, really hot in Savannah, in case you didn't know.
Yeah, we've reached that point. Summer is officially 100% here.
Yeah, it came in with a bang.
It did. So definitely time to hit the beach, the lake, another part of the world, or your air-conditioned house.
Yeah, hole up inside and read books.
Yes. It is officially like the dead of winter here.
Yeah, except for not cold.
Right. Well, with cold, you can... you know, put more things on.
I know. I would rather it be really cold than be super hot, because
there's nothing left to take off.
Yeah, I'm going to peel my skin off.
Yes. Well, it would still be hot.
Yeah, still be hot.
Okay. So what have you been reading, Melissa?
Well, a bunch of stuff.
As usual.
So the first one I was going to talk about... doesn't come out until, I think it's August 4th. Mm-hmm. It's definitely August. But it's been out in the UK for a while. It was on the Women's Prize for Fiction shortlist last year. And actually, Heather, who works for us, who reads the Women's Prize for Fiction, had put this on my radar and told me she thought that I would like it. So it's called Black Butterflies, and it's by Priscilla Morris. And it is set during the siege of Sarajevo, when Yugoslavia was breaking up. So the spring of 1992. The main character is named Zora, and she's in her mid-50s. Her husband is about 14 or 15 years older than she is.
Okay.
He had been a journalist, and she is a painter and also teaches at the art academy. And she is a well-known painter in her country. Like, she won a studio space in a government building because she's known for painting landscapes. Her mother is still alive, and at the beginning of the book, her mother is staying with them like she does during the winter, because she tends to become ill during the winter and has trouble living on her own. But she has her own apartment, and Zora and her husband get a call one night from a neighbor of her mother's that someone has broken into her apartment and, like, is squatting there. Okay. So they go to the apartment, and there's a woman and her two grown sons in the apartment. And she's like, you know, there's a law that was passed that anybody can move into any open apartments, which they had passed in Sarajevo at the time, because lots of people were seeing the writing on the wall and starting to leave the city. So there were a lot of empty apartments. So they passed a law saying anything that was empty, people could move into, and it was fine. And Zora's like, no, my mother is still alive. This is her apartment. And the woman refuses to leave until she has proof that that her mother is actually still alive. So she goes home. Even though her mother is sick, she drags her mother across town to prove to this woman that, you know, she's
here's
still
her
alive.
Mother. Here's,
you know. So she finally leaves, and she was like, well, just know that other people won't leave as easily as I did. And so the mother is freaking out about people touching her stuff. One of her, like a crystal decanter that had been a wedding present was destroyed. Like, so she's
That would bother me too.
No, yeah. I get just someone else being in your space, so she's stressed out. It's starting to make her more sick. So Zora and her husband decide that the husband and Zora's mother are going to go visit Zora's daughter, who lives in mm-hmm. England with her husband.
Okay.
Just to get away, have some space, right? Right. So they do that, and then Sarajevo falls.
Right.
And so her husband can't get back. Mm-hmm. She's stuck here in Sarajevo by herself during the war. Things are being shelled, like her neighbor's apartment, like the whole wall is blown out. All of her windows are shattered. It's war. It's war. But it's, the book is interesting because it's less about the war itself. Like, I mean, that's the background for what's mm-hmm. happening, but it's more about like the resilience of the people who stay in Sarajevo and like what humans can endure mm-hmm. and sort of the bonds that are forged between people during those times. Like, you know, it's like they were neighbors and they had right. interacted with each other, but it becomes something much more than that.
Yeah.
It's really, really good. It is incredibly timely. Mm-hmm. It really made me,
Well, you can just read the Prophet song now right after that.
I know. And, I really just go for it.
Go down that dark, dark road into our possible futures.
Yeah, no, I've really enjoyed this book. And it will stick with me for a really long time. And I'm not going to talk about like why the title is mm-hmm. what it is. But when you get to that part in the story, it is very moving. And it's a really beautiful symbol. But
I would love to read it.
Yeah, I'm going to, yeah. We'll hand it over to you.
Yes, it can go in my aspirational pile.
Yeah. And the author, is English and Bosnian. Mm-hmm. But the characters in it and the stories in it are drawn from her own family history.
Okay.
Which I thought was really cool. So
very good. Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
It has been handed over. All right. Which pile do I put it in? There you go. So you can't see us, but Melissa and I are sort of tactile visual. So we keep stacks of the books we're talking about next to us so we can kind of remember
yeah.
what was going on while we were reading them, because we do tend to read a lot of books. And I have all kinds of weird stories going on in my head. All the time.
I mean, that's even without reading books.
It's true.
Just be honest.
Well, I'm going to talk about something pretty different. So our mystery book club, again, I was, as I've said like 100 times on this podcast, not much of a mystery reader, but now I think I am officially a mystery reader. Mm-hmm. I enjoy them. And I'm glad that our book group has gotten over our dark academia phase, because I had kind of had enough of that for the time being, and I needed a break from five friends at college, one mystery, something terrible happened in their past, and now they're going to have to revisit it.
They're at their 10-year reunion, and the person who was murdered, maybe the person who murdered them wasn't the right person.
Dun, dun, dun. So recently we read Things We Do in the Dark, and it's by Jennifer Hillier?
Yeah.
Hillier. And it was really good. Thoroughly enjoyed the writing. It was twisty. So the story starts out with a woman who is waking up sort of from a head injury. She's fallen and hit the side of the bathtub. And as she's waking up, she notices that there are police staring at her with their guns drawn, and she's trying to stand up, and they're screaming, "Drop the weapon!" at her, and she doesn't know what they're talking about. Or,
well, that can't be good.
No. And then she looks down, and she's covered in blood, and she's holding her husband's straight razor, and she's like, "What weapon? I'm just holding a straight razor." And they're like, "Drop the weapon!" And so she drops it and then turns around, and her husband's in the bathtub, which is full of blood, and he's dead. And he's a famous comedian and actor, and she is his fourth wife, and she is about 14 years younger than he is, or maybe a little bit more, maybe 20 years younger than he is. And it doesn't look good for her.
Well, no. I mean, you know, being covered in blood and holding a weapon next to a body never looks good.
No, didn't look good. And on top of that, his personal assistant has walked in and she's like screaming, "What have you done?" And yeah, it's not a good look.
No.
And she can't remember. So they say, "Did you kill him?" And she says, "I can't remember. I don't know what happened," because she's, you know, got a head wound and injury and was passed out. So we go from there.
I would say the best answer in that situation would be no.
No, I know.
just go ahead and say no and hope that that's right.
Well, her lawyer does mention that, like, to her later on. She's like, oh, or no, would have worked. But yeah. Why did you say that? That's not good.
No.
So then we go through there, through that. She's taken to jail. She calls Elsie Dixon, who was her husband's lawyer and her husband's lifelong friend. And she's like, I wonder if Elsie's even going to come or defend me. Actually, not Elise Dixon. And so the lawyer does show up, and we go from there. And it turns out, of course, that Paris, who's the main character, has a secret past. And dun, 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 dun. And so we start delving into that through flashbacks into her past. And then you completely switch perspectives to Drew, who is a former journalist and now podcaster who lives in Toronto. And he was a friend of this girl, Joey, who died in a fire there. And Joey was the daughter of this famous murderess, Ruby Reyes, known as the Ice Queen. Mm-hmm. Mm. And if I really tell you any more than that, it's going to spoil it.
Yeah.
But it's very well written, and it does have an abrupt transition of point of view. So just, I'm going to warn you to be prepared for it, because you're going along with Paris's story and then suddenly you change.
Mm-hmm.
And that lasts for a quarter of the book, and then you switch back, and then you go between the two's perspectives. But it did have a surprise ending, and she throws out a lot of red herrings for you. So you're like, oh, it's her. Oh no, it's him. Oh no. And yeah. And then you think the whole thing has been solved, and you're about halfway through the book and you're like, well, okay, that's weird. What's going to happen now? And then you find out it's not, and there's much more to go.
So did you figure out who it was before the ending of the book?
So probably about 10 to 20 pages before the reveals, I was like, oh, I bet that's what's going to happen. But it wasn't like, I also misdirected me several times,
yeah,
where I was like, oh, I see. And I was wrong.
Yeah.
So, which is a sign of a good mystery.
No, it is. I mean, 'cause I read one recently, and I'm not going to say which one it is, that it was about 4 chapters into the book, like as soon as this one character was introduced, I was like, oh, it was him. And it was him.
No, it's not like that. So there are trigger warnings in the front of it, because the subject matter is actually pretty dark. There is child abuse, significant child abuse in there. There's also pretty grisly murder when you get to the murder, and that involves an ice skate. I'm just going to, hence the name, the Ice Queen.
Yeah. I mean, I like them where, like, I don't like to get to the end of a mystery and there's no possible way I could have figured it out, like that there aren't clues in there, but it has to be not so obvious.
Like, yeah, these were very, if I went back and reread it, I'm sure I could have picked up on the nuggets along there, but no, I didn't. I saw some of it happening. So there is a part where the mother who has committed this murder, the Ice Queen, is up for parole, which is kind of what starts everybody looking at this story again. And she is getting out on parole in sort of a Me Too way. So this book could have taken that turn, but it's so the main character, it turns out, has been terribly abused as a child.
Easy.
I know.
Don't spoil.
I'm not going to spoil. Well, that comes up pretty quickly. And so it really delves into a lot of bad parenting and sort of a nature versus nurture look at that, which is interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. And yes, I'm sorry. That's all I'm going to say. But I really enjoyed it, and I would highly recommend it. It's a pretty quick read. It would be an excellent sort of summer read.
Okay.
Airplane, beach, whatever. But yes, be warned, it's dark and murdery because it's a murder mystery.
Sure. So the next thing I'm going to talk about is called Kill the Farm Boy. Mm-hmm. And it's by Delilah Dawson and Kevin Hearn. And so I've talked about Bloom, written by Delilah Dawson, on a previous episode. And this is something so completely different from that. Delilah Dawson is a chameleon. And, like, she writes Star Wars books. She writes Minecraft books for kids. She writes, you know, cannibalistic cottagecore horror.
Can we rewind for a second? How exactly does cannibalistic cottagecore work?
You'd have to read Bloom and you'd know.
Okay, like, so do you bake really nice pies out of people? Something
maybe.
Like? Okay. All right.
But this one is a play. It's like a send-up of traditional white male fantasy stories. Mm-hmm. And this one is specifically sort of the initial part of it is playing off of The Princess Bride. Mm-hmm. But it goes off of that story fairly quickly. So it starts out with Worstley.
Who could that be?
Who is a farm boy. And he, his older brother, Bestley, has been killed. And he is, he's just left on the farm. And one day this pixie comes and is talking to him and is telling him how they're going to anoint, like, a chosen one, and they're going to have this great future. And so Worsley sets off with his now talking goat, Gustav.
Okay.
Who starts talking after this encounter with the pixie to go and seek his fortune because he is the chosen one. And so he goes and he's going to a tower that's covered in thorns, and he's going to find the princess that's asleep in the tower and, you know, find his fortune. So then it switches and there is a warrior named Fia who is also going into this tower covered with thorns because she is searching for a really great rose. Like, she knows there has to be a beautiful rose at the center of all of this because, you know, she's climbing up these things. She's got a huge sword. She's also got her pruning shears and she really just wants to find a nice rose.
Well, now the question is she going to
grow roses?
Right. Propagate her own.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what she's after. Mm-hmm. Okay.
She's climbing up. She falls. She falls on Worsley.
Yeah. Okay.
Worsley is not quite alive anymore. So she decides that she's going to put him up into the tower with the sleeping princess in the hope that
it'll revive him.
Well, that the magic will keep him not completely dead.
Mostly dead
until she can figure out a way to save him because she really does feel bad about this. And so while she's in there, she meets a bard who has been transformed by this magic with the castle into like a half rabbit, half woman.
Which half is which?
Do you know what? It didn't go that. I think it's all kind of
like Jessica Rabbit-ish?
No. Like, she's a woman who's got fur and is sort of, I don't, it, It was okay. Not well explained.
Okay.
So they decide to go off on a quest to find a witch who can help them bring Worsley back to life. And so Gustav becomes a part of their crew. They go first to a Dark Lord, thinking maybe he could help them. And Dark Lord Toby decides to come with them on their quest, as does his ward Poltro, who is like a ranger, but is very afraid of chickens.
Okay. So we've got a talking goat, a Dark Lord,
a warrior, and a ranger
and a botanist.
The warrior is the botanist, and then you've got a bard. So you've got a D&D group.
So all I can think about is the Monty Python where he's telling the story. Sir Richard ran away. He turned tail.
Sorry. Well,
and apologies to Monty Python. I'm not sure it was Sir Richard. But anyway,
they're off on their quest. It takes them through the elven kingdom in the woods called Morningwood.
Okay, so we've got a little bit of Hobbit stuff going
on. Yeah. And then they are off trying to find this witch to help them. It's hilarious.
It sounds like it. Can we have a movie, please?
Yeah, well, so it's the first in a trilogy. And the second one is called No Country for Old Gnomes. And my husband just finished reading it, and he was saying that it's sort of set in the same world, but it's not the same characters. Mm-hmm. But he said he actually liked that one a little bit more than this one. But it's hilarious. The allusions to all like fantasy stuff are super funny. What they do with this story is great. And I love that it's two authors writing together, and I couldn't tell, like,
it was seamless.
Yeah, it seemed like it was just one person writing it. And I'm sure they had a really good time coming up with a lot of these jokes. Mm-hmm.
I feel like we could write a book like that.
Yeah, maybe.
We could do an epistolary novel of things that happen at work.
There you
go.
Dear
Melissa.
So it is compared to Monty Python-esque humor and whimsy a la Terry Pratchett's Discworld, which I actually found it more kind of laugh out loud funny than the Discworld books. But yeah, if you are into things like Shrek,
because there is a Shrek element in that.
Yeah,
too.
There is a Shrek element to it too. If you like funny sort of...
Is there an audiobook of this?
I would imagine there would
because
have to
that
be.
That would be a great...
Yeah.
Yeah. Car ride.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a really good time. I highly recommend it. So Kill the Farm Boy by Delilah Dawson and Kevin Hearn.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm going to go on the lighter side too. So for our Jane Austen book club this month, we read Jane Austen and Scarsdale or Love, Death and the SATs. And this is the second by this author we've read for the book club. The first one was
Jane Austen and Boca.
Yes. And we all like Jane Austen and Boca quite a bit.
Yeah. And that was a playoff of Pride and Prejudice. Mm-hmm. This one is a playoff of Persuasion, which is nice because there's not a lot of those.
No, they're not. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I did find with book club that this one was a little less popular. I think part of the problem was that not as many people had read Persuasion. Mm. And if you haven't read Persuasion, then this is just kind of a romance.
Yeah.
So, and a slower moving, more, you know, not like enemies to, well, it has a enemies to lover component, sort of. But it's a, anyway, if you haven't.
It's a more mature love story,
yeah.
Which Persuasion is
a more
mature love story and sort of a slower moving, even though it's her shortest.
Mm-hmm.
It's a slower moving.
It is. And yeah. It's just got a lot of depth. Someone asked me at the book club why Persuasion was my favorite. And it was interesting trying to explain why it was my favorite of Jane Austen's. But anyway, it led to a lot of interesting discussion. I would rate this book sort of as, there was a movie called Admissions that came out with Tina Fey and, the actor who, Paul Rudd, never seems to age. That's what I was going to say.
It's true.
So Tina Fey and Paul Rudd, which was about a college admissions person at Princeton and sort of the side story was like getting kids into Princeton, getting kids into school. This one is told from a high school guidance counselor who in a really upscale high school in upstate New York, where competition is hot and everybody wants her kid to go to Ivy Leagues and other things. So she's dealing with all that. We did all talk about how we wish we had had a guidance counselor like this when we were in high school.
Yeah, my guidance counselor in high school forgot to send my college application. Like, I was like, are you kidding me?
I saw my high school counselor one time.
Yeah.
There were 750 people in my graduating class. We had four college counselors at my high school. She sent me to one. She did do this. She pulled me out of class and sent me to the Queens College rep talk. And that is where I ended up going to school. So yeah. She did do that.
Yeah, mine told me my application didn't need to be in for months. I was like, yes, that's true. That's true. If you're applying for regular decision, I'm applying for early admission. So it needs to be in by 2 days from now. Yeah.
So this one talks about all of the early admissions, the pros and cons, the parents, which I thought was interesting. But it follows along pretty closely to the story of Persuasion. And the main character is Anne. And she's the younger daughter of this wealthy family. The mother has died and the father is just a vain jerk and has run through all their money. And, so they have a house in Scarsdale and their grandmother, Winnie, who raised them is living there. And she's in her 90s and older and she's had a fall. And so Anne is kind of staying with her until she gets well enough. But Anne also has a small apartment in the city. There's a big family apartment in the city where her older sister lives, and it has plenty of room for all of them to live. But of course, Anne is not allowed to live there, and Winnie is not invited to live there. So the father has managed to get them in so much debt that they're going to have to sell the house in Scarsdale. Mm-hmm. Now, Annie had met this guy and had a relationship when she was in college, Ben, and he had graduated from Queens College in New York and was from Queens, and he was working in a travel agency when they met, and they kind of had a whirlwind romance, and Winnie, her grandmother, said, oh, you're too young. You're only 20, 21. You can't run off with him. He's really the first serious relationship you've had, and I mean, what are his prospects? He works in a travel agency. Do you really want to do this? So now we're in the future. Mm-hmm. Anne is still not married. She's working at as a guidance counselor. And Ben has become a successful travel writer and written a whole bunch of like Rick Steves travel guides. Mm-hmm. And has been living abroad for years with his sister and her son. And they decide it's time for her sister's son to start thinking about college. And Ben wants him to go to Columbia. Mm-hmm. And so they end up at this high school.
I wonder what's going to happen.
So it goes from there. And it was fun. It's a good summer book. Mm-hmm. It was interesting in book group. There were mixed reactions to this because some people thought it was told from a completely privileged upper class problems point of view. But Jane Austen is told from privileged upper class point of view.
It's not the servants telling the story.
It's not upstairs, downstairs. So I was unsure what they were expecting, which made it an interesting and more challenging book group to lead. But
I think that is kind of one of the difficulties sometimes in modernizing the stories. Because we ran into this with the one that was the play off of Sense and Sensibility,
right,
where the kind of the main problem in Sense and Sensibility is really not applicable because you don't have to marry.
Right. You can go out and get a job.
You can
and
go
work.
And get, yeah. Like, so yeah. That main tension doesn't exist in society right. today. So it's hard to modernize that in a way that keeps the feeling of the story, but actually just doesn't seem trite.
Right. And this one centered more around the house was the thing that they were going to lose, and the house was their family house. And albeit it was a big, you know, mansion of a house, but it was where their grandmother lived and where they had been raised. And so it did give you something to want to hang on to mm-hmm. out of that life. But yes, it did bring up some interesting conversation. Yeah. So I would recommend it, especially for, again, a fun read, Jane Austen and Scarsdale, mm-hmm. or Love, Death, and the SATs. And I actually watched the old version of Persuasion that I particularly like that was came out in like 1996.
Yeah, it was 95. The 90s. Yeah.
And then I watched Admissions afterwards. And I really do think all of that ties in well together. So,
cool.
All right, Melissa. All what right. you got next?
So the next one is, again, something from the Women's Prize for Fiction list. This one is from this year, and this didn't make the short list, I don't think. It was on the long list. It's by a Irish author, Megan mm-hmm. Nolan. It's her second book. It's called Ordinary Human Failings. So it starts out, it's 1990s London. Mm-hmm. It starts out in a kind of council housing. And there is a group of children is playing. And then one of the children goes missing. And then they find her body. And she's a toddler. Like, she's a small child. Mm-hmm. And it looks as if she's been strangled.
Oh.
And so the story starts really with a reporter who happens upon this story, and he's delving into it, and he's the only journalist who's picked up on this story at this point. And it seems like it's going to be just kind of an investigative, like, mystery, like, what happened to this kid.
Mm-hmm.
And as it goes along, it comes out that the last person seen with this little girl is another child named Lucy, I believe. And Lucy is 10 and is sort of a troubled child. And
mm-mm.
So the question becomes, did Lucy kill this other child?
Oh.
And the book then goes back and looks at Lucy's mom, Carmel, got pregnant as a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks at her life, what the relationship was like with Lucy's father, what her parents' relationship was like. Her brother is a non-functional alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is, again, there's the little mystery element of trying to figure out what happened to the kid, but it is more a book about generational trauma and sort of the trappings of poverty mm-hmm. and can you get out of those things, or does that break you to a point where there's just no coming back from it? It's really well done. It's told from kind of multiple perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's it is not easy subject mm-hmm. matter. There's a lot in there, but I would very highly recommend it. Like, the writing is really good.
You just need something light afterwards.
Yeah, you need, which is where Kill the Farm Boy comes in.
yes.
But yeah, again, just, and it made me want to go back and read her debut novel as well, which I ordered. Mm-hmm. It's called Acts of Desperation.
Which is on your desk as we speak.
You remember the cover.
I do. Yeah. I had to look at it all day yesterday. I was like, wow, okay.
Yeah, that's happening. Yeah. So yeah, look up what the cover of Acts of Desperation looks like. But this is just really, really.
The Irish know how to do this well. They can tell a dark tale.
Yeah. And yep.
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 Yep. Just leave it right there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, for something completely different, I jumped into the middle grade world this time.
Yay.
I love it so much. I am not finished with it, but I will be soon. Life has just, life. Just that. But it is, I have started, and it also completes my first in a series.
You're retrofitting for the reading challenge.
I am, but I am doing it. So first in a series, it's James Ponti, who I know we've talked about before, mm-hmm. and who I went to high school with, which is just such a weird, weird thing to think about where we both ended up. I wish we could go back and tell our high school selves, it's going to be okay.
It'll be fine.
Although James was always very optimistic, so he might have known it was going to be fine. He's just the nicest guy.
Yeah, he's lovely.
And life has thrown a lot at him, and he's still just the nicest guy. And anyway, he's got a series of books, which if you don't know about...
He's got a couple of series of books,
and they're all excellent.
Yeah.
And this one is called The Sherlock Society, and it is about two siblings whose last name is Sherlock, mm-hmm. and Alex and Zoe. And so they decide for the summer that instead of doing the normal summer jobs that teenagers can do, like babysitting, mowing grass, cleaning out attics, all of that stuff.
Are they going to solve mysteries because their last names are Sherlock?
They are. They're going to solve mysteries.
I mean, you're kind of forced into it at that point.
I know. So they have two other friends who join them. Lena, who's a bookworm, of course.
Mm-hmm. And need one of those to solve mysteries.
And Yachty, who's an aspiring cinematographer.
Mm.
And then they add to the mix their grandfather, who is a retired reporter.
Well, I kind of love that.
Yeah, and he's living with them. He lives at the home. Their mother is a lawyer, and their father is an environmentalist.
It's sort of like a kid twist on the Thursday Murder Club.
Kind of is. And grandpa's older. And
I would hope so.
He has a sweet aquamarine Cadillac that he's restored, and he drives them around in that. So he's in charge of transportation.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And that's how they get to do this. So they actually print up these flyers and everything in the beginning of the book. And so they get this phone call for what they think is going to be their first case. And they decide that they can't meet, like, they have to figure out where to meet because they're teenagers and they can't really drive anywhere and they don't have access. And they're like, well, maybe the public library, maybe. So they end up going to this washateria / cafe. Mm-hmm. And their mom shows up and they're all trying to hide from her, but she has actually seen one of the flyers and she is like, no, just here to tell you, absolutely not. That's dangerous. You're too young. You have to be licensed to be a detective.
Yeah.
There are a bunch of problems with this. You can't do it.
Well, it's like a kid version of the Thursday Murder Club crossed with like the Agatha Christie book I read, like the Tommy and Tuppence one, where it's like, we're just going to decide on a whim that, you know what? We're going to be adventurers and solve mysteries.
Let's do this. Well, this one has a little Nancy Drew-ish in it as well. So Granddad comes to the rescue and he's like, well, come with me. I might have a solution to this. And so he takes them to his storeroom where he has an entire wall of file cabinets and half of them are cold cases that he couldn't solve as a reporter.
Yep.
And so he's like, okay.
Here's Grandpa's murder board.
Yes. And it goes from there, and it's just delightful.
Yeah, that sounds great.
It really, really is. And it takes place in Miami, and it's a lot of fun because I grew up in Florida, and so I'm very familiar with all these places that they are. And, I'm thoroughly, thoroughly enjoying it. And I just can't – when you need a break from life, pick up a middle grade book.
Absolutely. They are just – delightful.
So good.
And they're so smart.
Yeah.
Like, they're just well done. People who write middle grade have a really great talent.
They do. And they have, so there's things that you don't get in the adult world. There's this optimism.
Mm-hmm.
And this belief that all things are possible. And just the freedom of working with characters like that and not throwing a bunch of... I mean, there are problems. These are tweens, so they're having the feelings. And especially, you know, the older sister in the relationship, they're definitely... She's kind of at war with her mom and...
Yeah, I mean, which is not to trivialize kids and say that kids don't have feelings
real
and
problems.
They don't have problems in their lives, but they just approach them with such a different attitude most of the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. It's just, it's charming and like...
Yeah, and there is, yeah. So, and the writing is usually really good.
There's a subtlety in middle grade mm-hmm. that I find lacking in YA.
Right. It's in a lot of adult novels as well. And so, yes, I just, every time I pick up a middle grade book, I think, why don't I read more middle grade? And so if you, your child or your inner child is looking for something just really fun and nice and well-written to read this summer,
Sherlock doesn't come out until September.
You'll have to wait until September. But I do recommend the Sherlock Society or absolutely anything by James Ponti because they're all good.
Yeah, he has a really great series. I think it's the Framed series. And I think the first one is called Framed, but it's like art thief stuff. Mm-hmm. All of his stuff is
well, and City
great.
Spies.
Yeah.
Really a lot of fun with a really diverse set of characters. But again, not about diversity, just about solving mysteries
mm-hmm.
and being together and using your smarts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay. Well, then again, something completely different. So I've been trying to read more nonfiction because I found that with nonfiction, I can generally read like a chapter or two, put it down and jump back mm-hmm. to it. So I've been reading a lot more nonfiction kind of in between the fiction stuff that I'm reading. And then this one is just really 100% custom made for me.
Yes.
It's by Thea Glassman and it's called Freaks, Gleeks, and Dawson's Creek, How 17 Shows Transform Television.
Mm-hmm.
This was just a lot of fun. And if you're kind of the same age that I am and, you know, remember when Jordan was holding Angela's hand in the boiler room on My So-Called Life or when Pacey and Joey finally got together on Dawson's Creek, you know, the moment we were all waiting for, this is going to be the book for you. So each chapter focuses on a different show and it's interesting because she kind of talks about how the show came about, what the conception of the show, casting for the show, about like the showrunners, the writers, all of that kind of stuff. And then sort of talks about how each one builds on the last one, so what each one does differently and then how the next show that she's talking about sort of builds on what the last one did. So the shows that she talks about in it are The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, My So-Called Life, mm-hmm. Dawson's Creek, Freaks and Geeks, The OC, Friday Night Lights, and Glee. And I will say I did skip the chapter on Friday Night Lights because I never watched that show. I could give...
It's not your
area. Yeah, football in Texas, not really interesting to me. Thank you.
There is drama, though.
I'm sure there is. But it was just a lot of fun reading this because it really did take me back to very specific moments mm-hmm. in like my teen years. And I vividly remember watching these shows and mm-hmm. like where I was when I was watching them, when that happened. So, it has prompted me now to be in another rewatch of Dawson's Creek. I'm almost to the part where Dawson ugly cries on the pier, which makes the whole thing worth it.
Okay. We're just different enough in age where those
Yeah, we're not your thing.
Well, I think I was probably in college when those were going on. And
Dawson's Creek came out. I think that it started in 1998.
Oh, so it was part of the dark
years. 1997, maybe.
Yeah,
because I remember it came. It was like when I was a senior in high school. Yeah, okay. 1998. Yeah.
So there's kind of a in my cultural history between 1996 and about 2002, there's just a blank spot.
Well, and you've said that before, but it really came home to roost for me when we were in Seattle and we went into a record store and you were like, "What is this?" And I was like, "It's the Fugees. How have you never heard this?"
I was like, "I love this." No, that's my husband and I call those the dark years, and it was just because we had a lot going on.
Yeah.
We had, young children, parents dying, and in general, we were just keeping our heads above water.
Yeah.
So we probably could have used a break and it would have enjoyed all those things. Yeah. But yeah. Anyway.
Well, I'm not sure Bill would have enjoyed Dawson's Creek. You never know.
He really got into the Chanel biopic that was on recently.
He's an enigma, that one.
Yeah. He's well versed in all the things, sort of. Anyway.
All right. Well, so our reading challenge prompt for June for this month is a book that you picked solely on the cover. And again, this one was going to be a super easy one because most of the books on my shelf I pick solely for the cover. But for that one, I went with When Among Crows by Veronica Roth. I had only ever read one other book by Veronica Roth and I had a very strong negative reaction to it, but it was the Divergent series.
Oh, okay.
Like, so I was in a book club. Somebody picked the first one. I read it. That was a thing I did. But I was curious to see what her writing is like for adults, because she's written at this point, I think, 3 or 4 books for an adult audience.
And this one does have a great cover.
And this is the arc of it that I'm holding. And like on the actual cover of it, this part that's like gold is more shimmery.
Yeah,
it's like really, really beautiful. This is great. It's only 160-ish pages. It's more a novella than anything else. But it's set in modern day Chicago. It kind of it reminded me of sort of the Dresden Files, where it's like you're in a modern day city, but you've got all this kind of like underworld monster stuff happening. And it's based off of Slavic folklore. So Baba Yaga features in here. There's a few other creatures that I wasn't familiar with. And I can't pronounce them because they're Polish words and it will just not go well for me.
No.
but it's, if you like fantasy sort of stuff, and more sort of like urban fantasy, I would say this is really, really good. And it's a very quick read. I've really enjoyed it.
Nice.
When Among Crows.
Ah, well, I'm not going to talk about the challenge book yet because I haven't read mine yet. But I absolutely will. But I did read another book that's coming out. I know, look at me. That comes out in September. And this is Matt Haig's new book, The Life Impossible. And I just pulled up the Edelweiss because I gave my copy of it to someone else. And it turns out I'm quoted in the Edelweiss, which is kind of nice. But anyway, I really enjoyed this book. I like Matt Haig. I really enjoyed The Midnight Library. And it was one of those books that it took me a minute to pick up because it was very popular. And I tend to shy away from those because if I don't like them, I don't want to have to talk about them with people when they're on the bestseller list.
Well, and also, I mean, for us, if things are incredibly popular and on the bestseller list, we don't generally need to sell them to people because people are going to buy them regardless.
Right.
Like, I would rather spend my time reading things that people might not necessarily pick up, but if I can steer them in that direction, like a debut from somebody or, you know, something that is not getting the attention.
Right. And that's, we both tend to do that. So, but this one, I really liked the Midnight Library so much that I wanted to read this one. And I was reading it kind of at the same time as one of my coworkers, and we did have a nice discussion about it because, she had not read The Midnight Library and was not a huge fan of this book, to be honest. But after we talked about it, I think she saw it from a different point of view and kind of... I think Matt Haig, as we know, is writes about depression and about second chances and really for kind of a depressive, possibly more neurodivergent audience. And this book keeps in that tradition, and it starts out, there's a retired math teacher, Grace Winters, or maths as they say in England, and her husband has passed away. She's retired and she's just stuck. Like, she's just going through her daily existence feeling barely alive, waiting to die. You find out that she's lost her son in a bicycle accident. He was hit by, and that's right at the beginning of the book, he was hit by a postal carrier, and she spends a lot of time blaming herself for that because it was a rainy day and he had wanted to go out and she didn't want to, and he rode his bike and she feels guilt for that. And then she misses her husband because he was her companion and best friend, and she feels sad that she didn't really enjoy the same music that he enjoyed and the same things always. And she really is just stuck. And then you go to this sort of flashback of this Christmas she had with a coworker, a teacher way back, who had been alone for Christmas, and she was kind of alone for Christmas. It was after her son died, and she invites the other teacher over and they just have this great time drinking wine and celebrating Christmas together. And then the other teacher moves on. She's got a beautiful voice. And then one day Grace gets a letter from a solicitor and she's inherited this house on Ibiza. And it turns out that the other teacher had moved to Ibiza and started a new life. And she left this house to Grace, and Grace is like, well, this is ridiculous. I barely even knew her. And ultimately, she decides to go to Ibiza, and there is like a series of clues, like you need to meet this person, you need to go to this beach, you should really try this, that Christina has left behind for her. And so she starts to open herself up to doing more of those things, and she meets this really weird kind of old hippie, old scientist diving instructor who had been there when her friend disappeared. So her friend is presumed dead, but also disappeared. And she really just opens herself up to kind of living life again and starts to discover things. And it has magical realism in it. So if you're not a fan of magical realism, but it's almost magical realism in the, there's more to this world than we understand. And you really have to open yourself up to see the beauty and the magic and the things in this world that are important. So through a kind of, well, I can't really, I'm going to give too much away if I say any more, but it's really a book about, it's kind of an environmental plea. There is that part in it. It reminded me a little bit of Richard Powers' last book, although it's not as sad or dark as that one.
Probably not as dense either.
Not as dense. So, and just kind of a reminder, it also reminded me of Richard Bach wrote a book, which I really liked in high school. I don't know if I'd like it now if I read it, called The Reluctant, Once and Reluctant Messiah, or something close to that.
Are you talking about the guy that wrote Jonathan Livingston?
Yes, I am talking about it. He's written other books too. But anyway, that book is about, it's about a guy who discovers that really anybody has the power within them to do all these seemingly miraculous things. We just don't see the magic in the world anymore. So this book has that kind of message into it too, which it's just kind of an idea of if you open your life up and you're open to the idea of really living and trying to savor the beauty of every moment in your life, that it is a magical world. And that a seemingly really small act of kindness that you think nothing about can come back and change the entire trajectory of your life.
Seems a little touchy-feely for you, Jessica.
I am. No, I like that kind of thing. I do. Okay. I do. It is not trite. I like the message. So what I like about Matt Haig is that he puts into stories, things that I now realize are kind of universal. Like, I guess I grew up as an only child, and so I don't understand that other people oftentimes have the same thoughts that you're having. Like, the same people dwell on their regrets. People look at the what ifs. What if I had done this? What if I had turned right instead of left? What if I had? Mm-hmm. And he does a really good job of exploring all that and making at least me feel less alone in the universe, that I'm not alone in my feelings.
Well, we're reading that for our FOMO book club when it comes out. So I'm waiting until it actually comes out because I don't read ARCs for book club because sometimes that bites you in the butt.
It does. It does. But when this one does come out, if you like Matt Haig, and I totally understand that this may not be a book for everyone, but I'm looking at the numbers right here because I have Edelweiss in front of me of how many we've sold. So there are of the Midnight Library. There are people it resonates with.
Well, I mean, and the Midnight Library is his most recent book, but he had several books before that. And I think there was something about the Midnight Library that resonated with more people, but that's sort of an aberration in his, in his books.
Well, I actually did read How to Stop Time as well. And I liked that one, but that one, yes, I would say the Midnight Library.
Well,
definitely
he's got like
his,
Humans and the Dead Fathers Club. Yeah. Like, I mean, he also has like a self-help one.
Reasons to Stay Alive and the Comfort Book, those two. And I read the Comfort Book as well. Those two also have done well. But the Midnight Library is his breakout book.
Yeah.
So this will probably be a book for that audience. But I really enjoyed it. If you're into that kind of thing, I would very much recommend it. For my cover book, I'm going to read The Blackbird Oracle, which comes out next month, but I got a copy of it. The cover is beautiful, I think. And I just have a couple of books in front of it that I have to read for work. And I can't wait to read this. Like, I got so excited when it came. I love Deborah Harkness, if you don't know that already.
Yes. So. I think we all know.
Love Deborah Harkness. If you're out there listening to this, I love your books. Okay.
So what are you reading currently?
Currently, I am listening to another Lady Emily mystery.
Shocker.
Wow, they are getting much more like murdery.
Yeah. What is this one called?
This one is a... Studying Crimson, maybe.
Okay.
It's the fourth or fifth one in the series. They're back in London right now. The season is on. And things are happening. People in society, the Ton, are having red paint thrown at their houses.
It's like PETA's there.
Yes, except this one is because they've got some secret.
Ooh.
And the secrets are being revealed.
Dun, dun, dun.
And people are being ruined. And it's scandalous, but there's also murder. So it goes beyond just hurting people's reputation. Now two people have died. I feel like there might be a third one that's going to die.
Okay.
She has innocents die in her book. So it's not like, you know, some murder mysteries. You're like, oh, that person died.
probably had it coming.
Yeah. These people did not have it coming. So it does make it, yeah, there is an element of tragedy involved in these sort of senseless deaths.
Okay.
So I'm towards the end of it, and I still don't know who did it.
Okay.
That's what I really, so I love the historical aspect of these, and I also rarely do I guess who's done it.
Okay.
Yeah. What about you?
So I just started a book called The Academy for Liars. It's by Alexis Henderson, and she apparently grew up in Savannah. Mm-hmm. And this is like a dark academia set at a fictionalized college in Savannah. And I'm going to say in Savannah in like quotation marks, because right now Savannah hasn't played like a huge role in it. And I feel like kind of the premise that she set up with where the college is located in the city, that they're not allowed to kind of leave the confines mm-hmm. of it. So I don't know that Savannah will play that big of a role in it, other than they talk about how hot and muggy it is and walking through the wet air, and which yeah. is,
well, that's accurate.
Yeah. And I'm listening to Ruth Ware's newest book, which is called One Perfect Couple. Mm-hmm. And this one is, it's sort of reminding me of One by One, which is the one at the ski resort.
That's my favorite, Ruth
There's
Ware.
Not a dual narrative in it like in that one, mm-hmm. but there's little things at the beginning of each chapter which are like kind of like what happens in the future of the book. Mm-hmm. And then it's the main characters, the woman is a scientist and she's been working on a project, like she's a virologist mm-hmm. and she's been working on a project and it's sort of come to nothing. So she's got disappointing results and she's not sure if her funding is going to be,
renewed.
And her boyfriend, they've been together for a couple of years. He's an actor mm-hmm. and he's an actor who's never really been in anything. And
so things are not going well.
No. And so he gets from his agent this opportunity to be on a reality show called One Perfect Couple. And so they have to go as a couple mm-hmm. and they're going to be on a deserted island off the coast of Indonesia. Okay. And it's going to be all they're kind of told is that it's going to be an elimination style competition. And then one person will be eliminated and then you can recouple up. So you don't end up with, you're not necessarily with your significant other the whole time.
No, thank you.
Yeah. And she only says yes to this because her boyfriend is so desperate to do this because he thinks that if this becomes a big thing, it will raise his profile and then mm-hmm. he'll be able to get acting jobs and, you know,
yada, yada, yada.
So she reluctantly agrees to do this and they end up, like, they fly to Indonesia, they go get on a boat to go to the island, and it's like things start to be revealed about mm-hmm. the competition that weren't made clear. And so everybody that's participating is a little like, but they're committed now. They've signed contracts. They're on the boat on the way there.
So,
and the flashbacky or the things at the beginning of the mm-hmm. chapters, you know, it doesn't go well.
None of those things ever go well. I don't know why anybody signs up to do them.
Yeah,
I really, really just don't.
So this one feels kind of more like her mm-hmm. wheelhouse. Like this feels more like, yeah. I read Zero Days and that one just felt atypical for her. Mm-hmm. And so this one just kind of feels more.
Well, she's very excited
yeah.
about the production of this book because it has sprayed edges.
Well,
and
sure.
And it's, I've seen lots of her Instagram is yeah. like, this is how they make this book. This is how they do it. Look at this book. It's so beautiful.
Well, and the woman who's reading it, because I've listened to several of her last books, mm-hmm. is the same narrator who reads her stuff. Yeah. And it's the same one who did the It Girl, but it's interesting because she manages to be that annoying with that main character and the wobble in mm-hmm. the voice all the time, but she,
is like a perfectly normal human being in this book.
Yeah.
Nice.
Who knew?
Nice. Yes, I'm also getting ready to read The Kiss of the Spider Woman, which I have never read before. Mm-hmm. And for book group, so that's the other one I'm reading, but I will read it this weekend.
Yeah, and so then our reading challenge prompt for July is a second chance at a book that you did not finish, which is going to be really hard for me because I don't DNF things. Like, I just power through and finish.
So I do. Oftentimes it's because something else, like I'm, oh gosh, I've got to read that book for book group, or I just don't have time. And so I'll read a few pages, think, wow, I can't wait to get back to this. And then I don't get back to it.
Yeah.
And so I already have one.
Yeah.
And I'm determined.
Okay.
And this is going to happen in July. I'm going to read The Master and the Margarita. I cannot tell you how many times I have bought this book, how many times it's been recommended to me. And I really like this trade edition of it that they've done. And yes, I bought this one at Greenlight Books in Brooklyn because I asked the bookseller, because oftentimes when Melissa and I visit bookstores, like,
we want to buy something at every indie bookstore we go to because we are an indie bookstore. And it's nice when people buy things from
right,
you.
And we want to support them, but it's hard to find something. So oftentimes I'll ask a bookseller on the floor, what is your all-time favorite book that you would recommend? And this one was The Master and the Margarita in this beautiful trade edition. And so this is my copy with the deckled edges and everything, and I am going to read it this month.
Yeah, that I'm going to have to really think hard about this because it is not something I do.
Mm-hmm. I used to be that way, but again, Yeah,
I've just never been that way. Like, if I start it, I finish it.
Always I was until about 5 years into owning a bookstore, and now
I still do.
I
mean, even when I'm really not enjoying something, like,
yes, Melissa will say, well, I rage read this weekend.
Yeah, like if I start listening to something and I'm not enjoying it, to get through it more quickly, I'll pick up the physical version of it and listen to it and read it so I will get through it. But like, I finish it. And
You'll find something. There's got to be something.
Nothing is coming to mind. I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
If nothing else, I'll lie and say I didn't finish this book and I'll read something that is on my TBR.
We could put not finished / hanging around forever that we haven't read.
I feel like that's maybe something that's on there too. Well, anyway.
Yes.
Because just understand that my next month book may not 100% fit the challenge, but I'll read something.
Yes. Well, and that my books will ultimately, I will finish the challenge, but maybe at my own pace.
That's fine. Don't want you to pull a hamstring.
No. Hate it when it happens. So,
all right. Well, so if you all are reading along with our reading challenge, be sure to fill out the little template thing that we have on our Instagram and tag us in it. Cause again, you are, if you finish the challenge in a timely manner, you can be registered to win a gift card to the shop, which is very exciting. Mm-hmm. And then I guess we'll talk to you next month.
We will. We'll talk to you next month. Are we going to take August off?
No, because we take August off from book clubs.
Yes, so we'll have time to read
all the things that we want to read.
It just would be delicious.
I'm so excited. I'm also excited. I'm just going to put in another word about the Blackbird Chronicle because they have the narrator that did the first three books in her series back. They had a different narrator for Times Convert, which I was not a huge fan of.
You go into your, 800 re-listen of these in like the last 3 years, then you can,
it'll be consistent, but I'm waiting because so I've got to get through my Lady Emily's, for a while.
Yeah. And I need to pick back up my Agatha Christie and Evelyn Waugh. Like, I've got two in my stack, but I had some other things that had to be read in place of those. So,
Yeah. Okay. Well, happy reading.
Right. And we'll talk to you later.